Inside Red Bull Bowl Bora Hansgrohe, the podcast from OWD Online on the Tour de France. For 3 weeks, we'll accompany the biggest and most successful German cycling team through the Tour de France with team manager Ralf Denk. Do you have questions for Ralf Denk? Send them to tobias.ruf@owmedia.de. And now, have fun with the new.
Tadej Pogacar wins on the French national holiday in Les Lilas and extends his lead in the general classification. Remco Evenepoel takes second place and moves to third in the GC. Florian Lipowitz finishes fourth today and is now sixth in the GC. There is a lot to discuss. Let's get into it with the team manager of Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe. Hello to Ralf Denk.
Hello and good evening to Rosenheim.
Yes, lots to discuss. Let's start with the facts. Second and fourth place today, third and sixth in the GC. Fully satisfied, or is there anything to criticize today?
When I talk about our guys, so about Remco and about Florian and also the whole team, Jai Hindley was also up there for a long time. We are fully satisfied. Good day for us.
Then let's get into the race action. So towards the end, a lot happened that was to be expected. Isaac Del Toro, who was third in the GC at that point, was visibly struggling. It's about the podium. Up front, Remco Evenepoel took the initiative, had some trouble in between. Did he overdo it a bit there?
Yeah, first we might have to start a bit further back, 25, 30 kilometers before the finish. Phenomenally riding Richard Carapaz. He wanted to win the stage with brute force. UAE took control. Then shortly later, Visma. So both Vingegaard and Pogacar also wanted to win the stage, not just Richard Carapaz. Pogacar then goes. And that was already a massively high baseline pace there. So that was only a very small group of plus minus 10 riders. And Pogacar, for the first time, I'll put it this way, didn't get away quite as effortlessly as usual, my impression. The group behind, Vingegaard was in there, Florian Lipowitz was in there, Remco Evenepoel was in there, two guys from Lidl Trek were in there, Paul Sechers was also still in there. In my opinion, if that group works well together, they bring Pogacar back today zurück. Remco invested a massive amount in that phase of the race, and he almost paid a high price for it because he had trouble, as you say, on the final climb, keeping up with the chaser, the chasing group. And yeah, maybe he went a bit too deep there. But on the other hand, my opinion also, had the Lidl Trek could have done more. They had two in the group. They have, with their rider Skelmose Jensen, a rider who most likely has no chance left for the podium. He actually, I think, could have at least shared some of the work. Remco was again the one who rode the most, which really sets him apart because he wasn't satisfied with second place. He absolutely wanted to win the stage, invested a lot, then had brief problems, but then came back phenomenally and in the end still finished second.
At that moment when Evenepoel had to let go, was there an instruction to Florian Lipowitz to say, please don't push the pace at the front, try to hold back instead? It looked like that at times, so that the gap to Evenepoel wouldn't get too big. Was there an instruction? I mean, this co-captain strategy, it leaves room for speculation.
Yeah, but in that phase, I mean, the field was split anyway. There was no team car there. There was also the TV picture delayed by 10 seconds. No, that was situational. Florian was also at his limit. And first, the others would have had to increase the gap to Remco. They didn't manage that either. And Remco then recovered relatively quickly and came back and then delivered phenomenally again in the finale. Like I said, both guys did a mega good job up there, and there was no reason to, let's say, ride one of them out of the classification or to wait. So both really did a good job. Kudos.
Del Toro, that is a bit of the elephant in the room for me right now, because if Lipovitz had pushed through the whole group, of course, they could have increased the gap to Del Toro, but would those few seconds, which it probably would have been in the end, have been too high a price to pay also to not take Evenepoel out, as you just hinted at?
That was indeed the reason at the bottom before the last climb why Remco was so keen to keep the pace high. On one hand, maybe to close the gap to the front to Pogacar, but also to not let Del Toro back in. But a group only works in harmony if everyone does plus minus the same. And the guys from Lidl did relatively little. Paul Sexas was alone. I understand that he doesn't do quite as much. But the group just didn't work in harmony, just like on stage six after the Tourmalet. And that's why Remco, because he was so driven to win today, also did the most.
Then it's not really your job, as I understand it now, to say, yeah, now we are basically hurting ourselves. The others do nothing, and we are supposed to hurt ourselves in the end. That would have been tactically unwise at that moment. That's how I interpret it now.
Ja, Remco hätte sich leider selbst geschadet, ja, weil er so einen Drang hatte heute auf dem Sieg. Und also da großes Chapeau, also wie
Oh,
auf, oder
it
großes
is late
Lob.
for
Also
saying
ja,
that he
sieben Zettel vor
was
second place, like he made
even
ja
one
einen Radar
was
in der Gruppe.
big praise, Florian Lipowitz. I mean, I have to make it clear to the people out there again, this is his second Tour de France. I think he does it so pleasantly calm. He's so consistent. I somehow never have the feeling, ah, now something could today in the group there can really something happen to him. Then after the race, he says, hey, he's mega happy also that Remco came back again, who then finishes second. He's fourth. His teammate pockets the bonus seconds. He pockets none. He's still mega happy, seems calm, deeply relaxed, somehow having things under control with an amazing grip in his second Tour de France, who is not a trained cyclist. I'm extremely taken by that. How do you see it? Who, of course, can't look at it neutrally due to your function, but it is already amazing.
Mega gut, wie er das macht, wie er auch mit den Medien mittlerweile umgeht.
No.
Aber auch, was für pure Kraft und Talent dahinter steckt. Und
I said it at the beginning when we spoke before the first stage, I think how I assess the route in general. There we also, or I made the statement, we are talking about seconds in the first half of the Tour de France and talking about minutes in the second half, especially on the last weekend. And I stick to my opinion that the final weekend, and I know all the mountains of the final weekend will be so hard that we will really talk about minutes there. You could already see today one or two are weakening. Example, Isaac Del Toro, also a Jonas Vingegaard looked anything but fresh in the final. And the Tour de France final weekend after the time trial, that will be so hard again. And I have a very, very good gut feeling for this period for Florian.
Yeah, then let's stick with Vingegaard. He won here 3 years ago. Today, then loses over 10 seconds to the other podium contenders. I don't even talk about Pogacar anymore when I look at Vingegaard. So second place, also after the impressions today, is, I think, already something that one could aim for.
Yeah, it's all still between, I'd say, seventh, eighth place and second place up front, all close together. And as said, we will talk about minutes. And we are sitting there now quite relaxed in third place and sixth place. And we have to do our job. We must not crash. Today there were heavy crashes again on the descent from the penultimate mountain. Tom Pidcock too, who is considered a descent specialist, went down on the road. And that just mustn't happen to us. So we have to keep going focused. But then I am so far very, very happy with how the guys are performing and also what our starting position is.
Exactly. Let's briefly talk about this Paul Sexas, 19 years old, first Tour de France, third today, fifth in the general classification. He even tried something in between. Those were, I thought, not quite consistent. He also keeps turning around. For a 19-year-old, that is, of course, all completely legitimate. But he is already showing so far why he is called the big mega talent that he is. So I'm impressed by the performance.
That is a very, very great performance. And one can already congratulate him now because we are already at 10 days of bike racing. He has never done that in his life. He has never ridden a Grand Tour. So he has ridden neither the Giro d'Italia, nor the Tour de France, nor the Vuelta a España. It is very, very brave of his team Decathlon to make him captain at the Tour de France as a 19-year-old. And there are split opinions about it. There are opinions that say this is absolutely right. And there are also opinions that completely burn him out. French team, the contract expires next year. He's 19 years old, super talent. Even the French president Macron got involved in the contracts poker. There's an offer on the table from a team from the second division of 13 million per year. As a 19-year-old, you first have to cope with all of that.
Yeah.
He earned nothing at all from cycling 2 years ago, the boy. And now he has by far the best offer on the table, far, far above Pogacar. So that is already very crazy what is currently raining down on the boy. I don't wish it on him, but those are already very, very many impressions that he first has to process. And I hope he gets it dealt with.
You mentioned these two polls. Some say exactly right. Others say he's being burned out. How do you see it?
We have a very similar example. We have a Lorenzo Finn. The Lorenzo Finn is also 19 years old. They both also still rode in the U23 class.
And beide
were right at the front at the Tour de l'Avenir, which is the Tour de France for U23 riders. Paul Sexas won it. Lorenzo Finn was fourth. Yeah. Lorenzo Finn has now still won the Giro d'Italia in the U23 class. We are building Lorenzo Finn up very, very carefully. We actively decided against a quick pro career, but he is still riding in the U23s this year and will only join us as a pro next year. And that's a different direction. In 3-4 years, we will see which was the better direction, the better strategy. I rather believe the one we are running is more sustainable, but there are always wonders also in cycling.
But the starting point is different for Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe compared to Team Decathlon.
In this case, yes, because Lorenzo Finn is Italian. We are a German team. That means he's automatically not in the spotlight as much as a Paul Sexas on a French team as a Frenchman.
And you have two there. And you have two riders who are, and we can see it now, riding for the general classification. So especially for a smaller team like Decathlon, that's obviously a big opportunity. You always talk about, hey, this is where you have to generate attention. This is where the sponsors are. This is where the public is. So from a team perspective, I can understand it more with them than I would have with you guys.
Yeah, I have to correct you for once today. Decathlon is not a small team. It's a very financially strong team that takes the sport very, very seriously. And Decathlon, with everything they do with their in-house development, whether it's gear, whether it's bikes, whether it's clothing, you have to take them seriously. You should take them seriously. They also take the sport of cycling very, very seriously. But of course, it's a French team. He's French, but they've also already won a stage, the sprint stage in Pau, if we remember. And they already have a stage under their belt. So they'd actually be somewhat satisfied already. Maybe they wouldn't have even needed Sexas, but as I said, that's a lot of discussion, a lot of speculation. Ultimately, we'll have to talk again in 2 or 3 years about which path was the right one, Paul Sexas or Lorenzo Finn.
Okay. I'll put that on my list for inside Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe in 3 years. So let's talk briefly about Maxim van Gils. He had to drop off early again today. He was originally planned as someone who, similar to Jai Hindley, would stay up there for a relatively long time on stages like this. Is he not feeling well? Is the form not there? What do you know about the reason it didn't work out today?
It's two things. We're talking about nuances here. But of course, the level at the Tour de France is so high. First, he was very, very seriously injured in February at the race in Andalusia and fractured his pelvis and has a long rehab behind him. Then he came back relatively well and quickly for the Dauphiné, also won a stage at the Critérium du Dauphiné, and was also heavily involved in the podium in the second place of Luke Tackwell. My thought, and I'm no sports scientist, is that maybe he's still lacking a bit of a base now, because he didn't ride a bike at all for many weeks, yeah? And maybe he's lacking a bit of a base, so he's maybe not as strong right now as we hoped. And what also comes into play, which I know because I talked to him personally, is that he doesn't really love the heat, yeah? So if it were 10 degrees cooler, he would raise his hand and say, I'd rather have this temperature. He's Belgian, maybe a bit different from the Spanish or Italian riders who are more heat resistant. So those are two small factors. And then you're maybe not in the last 30 on the climb, but only in the last 50 or 60. We're talking here about the biggest bike race in the world and about nuances. But if everything isn't at 100%, then you have no chance of being in the last 20 or 30 on the climb.
And as you always like to say, this Tour de France is no picnic. Speaking of no picnic, I think some teams, you gave us great insights before the rest day on Sunday into whole hotel situation and what's being done to make sure the teams and riders recover well. So some teams certainly wished things were different. Pogacar's hotel had no air conditioning. Team Uno X Mobility. Anders Halland Johannessen posted a video. You can see dirt in the room. You can see cobwebs in the room. No air conditioning. They went outside and slept on the balcony. So we're not on a luxury cruise ship here, but something like that is unworthy of the Tour de France, I think.
You can look at it that way. In the end, I see it that way too. But you also have to look at the big picture. We had incredibly beautiful images today in the Massif Central. I mean, that was really spectacular. And at some point today, when I was watching it on TV, I thought, oh, maybe you'll go there sometime and do a cycling holiday. Okay. We want to have these images in cycling. I think these images are also important for cycling. Anyone who has ever been to the Massif Central knows that it is an absolutely structurally weak region. And in a structurally weak region, there aren't that many hotels. Then the Tour de France keeps getting bigger and bigger, and the teams are also getting bigger and bigger. And I know from the organizer, they need 3,000 beds every day. And that is a massive number. They might exist in the metropolitan areas of Paris, Lyon, and Marseille, but they just don't exist in the Massif Central. And that's why the organizers often take what's available on the market. And the fact that you can't check every hotel is difficult. But let me put it this way. I've never seen a bad hotel for officials, but I've seen many bad hotels for teams. And maybe we need to use some common sense here so that the protagonists, the ones who are putting on the show, on the road, are given the good hotels and not the officials. I experienced the same thing this year at the Giro d'Italia. We were often in terrible hotels, often just 2-star Italian standard. And then you go for a walk in the village in the evening to stretch your legs and you see the officials in front of a 4-star hotel. So there, I think we should perhaps prioritize the riders. But when you look at the big picture, it's not easy. An immediate solution would be to stop going to the Massif Central. But then we also wouldn't have the beautiful mountains, the beautiful images. And that's also something, and you have to know this, that the Tour de France always prides itself on. We also visit the structurally weak regions in France and try to boost their tourism. That is also a guiding principle of the Tour de France.
Okay, great. Ralph, we're grateful to you every day for showing us the big picture with things we couldn't possibly know, and for the great insights you've presented to us again today. So we'll push the background topic to tomorrow. Let's look at Wednesday. So it starts at 1:50 p.m. Expected arrival is 5:30 p.m. It goes from Vichy to Nevers. 161 kilometers will be ridden. Two category four climbs, otherwise it'll be flat. So the sprinters don't have many chances anyway. They're getting fewer and fewer, of course. But tomorrow could be another day for the sprinters. What's your feeling?
Looking at the route profile, I'm completely with you. The only thing that can cause difficulties on these supposedly flat stages is the wind, the weather. But currently it looks pretty good there too. So my tip tomorrow, sprint the GC riders around Florian, Remco, and everyone else who battle it out daily for the top 10. They'll be grateful if the race is a bit quieter for the guys tomorrow.
They earned that break today too. The two of us aren't taking a break tomorrow in quotation marks, of course. I mean, there's still bike racing going on at the Tour de France, but it should be quieter. So no break for the two of us tomorrow, because we'll hear from each other as usual after the stage. I say congratulations on a great bike race today, also from Red Bull Bora Hans Grohe, and thanks for the chat, dear Ralf.
My pleasure, and have a nice evening, and best regards back to Rosenheim.
That was the latest edition of Inside Red Bull Bora Hans Grohe, the podcast from OWB Online on the Tour de France. You can find the podcast on all popular podcatchers and on the websites of OWB Media and IPMedia. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.